for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 363 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week we kick off a new year with a terrific conversation with David F. Walker, an accomplished comics creator who also was taking on a historical graphic novel called The Life of Frederick Douglass. It's from 10 Speed Press and it's due out this Tuesday. You can buy it at Amazon and it should be appearing in comic shops across the world shortly thereafter. We discussed this historical figure who has had a lot of influence on today's society as well as during his own time period. Now don't let the word historical scare you away. It's a well-told story with lots of interesting facts that I think you're going to really enjoy. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show. For the first interview of 2019, I'm really glad to welcome David F. Walker, who has a wonderful book coming out this Tuesday called The Life of Frederick Douglass, a graphic narrative of a slave's journey from bondage to freedom. How you doing, David?
I'm doing good. It's great to talk to you. Thank you for having me on.
Well, it's good to talk to you. I wrote a column back when I first saw the news release about this book, and I was just transfixed when I saw about it because I love books that teach me things I don't know about. And so
this is one of them.
Well, I honestly have to say I don't know much about this aspect. I'm interested in the Civil War in that time period, which is, of course, when Frederick Douglass lived. But I don't know much about him specifically. So I'm really looking forward to the book. I think it's going to be great fun for me to read it. And I noticed when I went through on Amazon.com, I saw that they had sample pages. And boy, you put a lot of good information in there. I have to say, right off the bat, wow, I was really impressed.
Thanks. We, going into this project, myself, my editor, the artist, we really talked about how much information we could try to pack in this space. We always knew what the page count was going to be, and I wanted to make sure that that we gave as much to the reader as possible, because there's a lot of people who either don't know much about Frederick Douglass, or maybe they don't know anything about him. He's somewhat of an iconic figure in U.S. history, but not necessarily that well known in terms of his life and his accomplishments.
Of course, that leads me to ask you, because comic readers are not necessarily interested in history, shall we say? And so, why did you choose to write this book, and why about Frederick Douglass?
Well, it's a combination of factors. I had been thinking for a long time about going into doing some nonfiction stuff, some historical stuff, simply because I'm fascinated with it. And I think that there's a tremendous opportunity within the medium of comics and graphic novels, and that there's a lot of people who do turn towards that medium for more than just your standard superhero stuff. So I'd been thinking about this for a long time, but I wasn't really sure what subject I wanted to tackle. Mm-hmm. And then Patrick, my editor at 10 Speed Press, just randomly reached out to me one day. I'd never met him before. And he sent an email and said, he liked my work and wanted to know if I was interested in doing anything nonfiction, and that they were really interested in doing something on the life of Frederick Douglass. And, I knew – I'm very remedial, I guess, at the time in my knowledge of Frederick Douglass. And I said, yeah, that would be pretty interesting. And so I put together a proposal and we jumped into it. And I knew, there's some of the details I'm leaving out. I had a copy of Frederick Douglass's first autobiography, which I probably had sitting on my bookshelf for 30 years and hadn't looked at in maybe that long. Hmm. Something I got shortly after high school. And so I went back and started reading that. And then within the first couple chapters, I was like, yeah, this is a project I want to do. Mm-hmm. And then I delved in, you know, obviously I delved in more deeply to his life and that the history of that era and just kept getting, you know, sucked further and further into this deep well of history. And I think that, you know, when we talk about comics, this also goes back to the question. I think that there's we talk about comics or graphic novels. There's a lot of people who, you know, they're only interested in, you know, the more traditional mainstream stuff. But myself, I'm a teacher, and I talk to a lot of other teachers. I talk to a lot of librarians, and there's this whole other audience out there that exists beyond that traditional Wednesday warrior, if you will, audience for comics and graphic novels. And that was, this is as much for that audience that we don't talk about as much as it is for the audience that, you know, is going to their local comic stores on Wednesdays or maybe on Saturdays and grabbing, you know, whatever offerings are, you know, from DC or Marvel or other publishers.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because I wrote a column, as I said, about this, and the column was about how I wish we had more historical comics.
Yeah.
One of my very favorites was Mouse, which had to do with World War II.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And other ones. So I'm looking forward to this being in that vein, that I'm going to learn a whole bunch of stuff, and I'm going to really get to appreciate all these good things. So I'm just dying to get it. I can't get here soon enough. It's coming out on Tuesday the 8th. It's coming through Amazon, and you can buy Kindle, and you can buy the paperback versions there. And I won't tell anybody, but I bought both versions because I want to read it as soon as it comes out. And I don't want to have a good copy to keep. So what about comic stores? Can comic stores order it?
Oh, yeah. Comic stores can order it. And regular bookstores, even though they're fewer and more far between than when I was a kid. But if there's, say, a Barnes & Noble near you or an independent bookseller, some of them might already have it, but yeah, you can anywhere finer books are sold. You should be able to get a copy of it, and in addition, obviously, to Amazon. But I've had a lot of people reaching out asking me, and it's just sort of funny because, you know, when I was a kid growing up, not only was there's like B. Dalton's and Barnes and Noble's and Borders and places like that, but then there was the independent booksellers and. There's not as many of those as there used to be, and that's sort of a sad reality. And as I want to do some semblance of a book tour in the spring, and I'm looking for independent bookstores across the country, and there's not nearly as many as there was when I was a kid. When I was a kid, if I would go visit relatives in another city or another town, I'd go to the bookstore, and I always left with a, you know, some sort of paperback or if I was really lucky and someone wanted to splurge, I'd get a hardcover of something.
Mm-hmm. Pretty cool. Now, in your tour, might you consider comic shops?
I would definitely do comic shops too. Okay. You know, I'm talking to a couple of universities that want me to come out and do some lecturing. And so it's still up in the air. You know, I just want to go and get on the road and meet some people and meet like-minded, I guess, for lack of a better term, history buffs. Mm-hmm. There's moments where I feel like woefully uninformed when it comes to history, because sometimes I'll talk to other people that know so much more than I do. Mm-hmm. But I love that exchange of information, and that's part of what I think is cool about comics and graphic novels, is that a lot of times it's just a lot more accessible. You know, when I was doing research for this particular project, you know, I had a stack of books. Some of them were 600-700 pages long, and it's like, where do you know, that can be pretty daunting. Mm-hmm. And part of my goal with this book was to provide an introduction to Frederick Douglass and his life. Mm-hmm. And if people want to pick up another book, you know, if they want to pick up one of, he wrote three autobiographies. Mm-hmm. But there's some great books. There's one that just came out like 4 months ago about his life. It's amazing. And if you want to tackle something that's 700 pages, mm-hmm, that you need a back brace just to lift up, it's out there.
Now, how many pages are in your book?
It's 170 plus. I think it's a total of 186 pages or something like that. It was 170 pages of actual content, but then you throw in things like the table of contents and the bibliography and the index, and it adds up. But I know that the script I wrote was exactly 170 pages.
You know, if you go to Amazon, you get the chance to see some of the pages from it.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed the way it's laid out, and I enjoyed the way that the artwork was done. It has kind of a historical feel to it when the way it's done.
Yeah, the artist, the Damon, who did the art, and then Marissa, she did the colors. We talked a lot about, you know, the sort of color palette that we were going to use, and Damon, I got him a ton of reference material. There, you know, Frederick Douglass, one of the things that we talk about in the book was the most photographed American of the 19th century. And
yeah, I read so that. I was shocked by that. I mean, I was genuinely surprised by that. I mean, why was that?
A lot of it was because he was very aware of the power of photography, and he actually wrote about this in some of his writings and gave public speeches on it. And he felt that, you know, this was when photography just came into existence. It was, you know, invented as an art form, and he recognized in it the ability to capture the likeness of a person that was free of both prejudice and sort of editorializing, which is what illustrations and paintings had done for centuries before. Mm-hmm. And so he recognized that the photography could be a tool to help in how African Americans were presented both here in the US but also abroad. And so he went out of his way to have his portrait taken as many times as possible. You know, and the end result, I believe that was only the Queen of England at that time, that there's more photographs of her than anyone else on a worldwide level. But in the U.S., it's Frederick Douglass, then I believe it's Abraham Lincoln, and then Ulysses S. Grant, or maybe it's the other way around. Maybe it was Ulysses S. Grant and Abraham Lincoln. But he's, you know, when you really study Frederick Douglass's life, what you see is that in a lot of ways he was – for lack of a better term, he's one of the first celebrities in this country.
I was thinking it's like early social media type stuff.
Yeah. I mean, this never even made it into the book, but you know, there were actually Frederick Douglass dolls in the 1800s. Yeah, that was the level of stardom that he had achieved, which is kind of interesting because, you know, he was a runaway slave who had written his, you know, this memoir and become a public speaker and very much became a very highly regarded individual. He was also hated by a lot of people too, because he was a direct threat to the institution of slavery. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there was, I found a picture during my research of a Frederick Douglass doll. And I was hoping to get more information about them at one point, 'cause I wanted to put them in the book, and there wasn't enough documented information. And I knew that, I'm sure that if I'd made a trip to either Washington, D.C. or to Rochester, New York, where two of the bigger, Frederick Douglass library collections are, I could have found out more information, but there is more than enough stuff to go into the book, and I felt like, well, the doll can just be an interesting talking point for, you know, podcasts and things like that.
Just fascinating. I mean, you know, because, you know, when we think back to the 1800s, we don't think such things could exist at that point. So to find out that all these things were, and especially with Frederick Douglass, that's just amazing stuff to me. Now, I know we want people to buy the book. I'm not trying to down the sales of the book. But why don't you describe who Frederick Douglass was? Say somebody doesn't know who he is.
Okay. Well, yeah, there's a lot of people who don't know who he is or what he did. He was Frederick Douglass was born a slave it depends on what historian you talk to. Some say 1817, others say 1818. But he was born a slave in Maryland. And he was able to, at a fairly early age, he learned how to read and then write, which was illegal blacks and slaves were not legally allowed to know how to read or write, but he managed to learn how to read and write, which I get into in the book, and became obsessed with the concept of freedom very early at a young age. Mm-hmm. And after a failed escape attempt, managed to escape, went to first to New York and then to Massachusetts and then back to upstate New York, and where he became a public speaker and then a writer, and a very outspoken proponent against slavery, and wrote his first autobiography. It became a national bestseller, became one of the key books that abolitionists and anti-slavery folks used in their argument against slavery. And then eventually he ascended, you know, in both stature and power. He held court with Abraham Lincoln. He was very crucial in the war movement during the Civil War in recruiting black soldiers. But before that was in convincing the Union Army to allow blacks to fight in the war. And his whole argument was that this is our war. This is the war to determine if we are free or not. Mm-hmm. And then after the war, he became an ambassador to Haiti and did all sorts of amazing things. He had his own newspaper for many years, and you know, toured all over the world. And so that, in a nutshell, is the nuts and bolts of who he was. But there's so much more. You know, he became a conductor on the Underground Railroad and helped other slaves escape to freedom. Hmm. You know, all sorts of interesting stuff. A lot of it is in the book. And then there's also, you know, obviously tons of stuff that isn't in the book, because it's there's only so much you can fit into that limited space. But, you know, I was marginally aware of who he was, and I knew a little bit about him. Mm-hmm. From when I was a kid and you know, high school U.S. history, that sort of stuff, but not by any stretch of the imagination an expert on his life. Mm-hmm. And I don't necessarily know if I'm an expert now. I know more than the average person. Mm-hmm. But I spent over a year of my life researching him and then writing about him. And, you know, the more I know about Frederick Douglass, the more I know about his accomplishments, the more convinced I am that, you know, when we talk about the greatest heroes in American history, these iconic figures that we talk about, the fact that he isn't up there with all of them, mm-hmm. is kind of a travesty, because at the end of the day, he really, you know, of all the abolitionists, especially the former slaves, who runaway slaves, he was one of the most outspoken, and then there's all these other ones whose names we don't even know, in terms of just everyday conversation. So now it's like, well, what am I going to do next to make sure people know about some of these other folks?
Mm-hmm. Is there a series coming from you, maybe?
I don't know if it's going to come from me. I mean, it may if nobody else does it, but I definitely think that there's some pretty interesting stuff there. You know, I think that the history of slavery in general is not well discussed. It's a very painful thing to talk about. Mm-hmm. And I know that even for myself, during the research and writing, had a very strong emotional toll on me. Hmm. But it's also, there's something liberating that comes from knowing these things. And I think that in especially here in the US, we don't like to talk about some of this stuff. Some people can't talk about it without getting angry. Other people get defensive. Other people have their feelings hurt. Mm-hmm. And it's you know, it's not to say that, you know, I'm here to condemn anybody in 2019 for, you know, for slavery 100 years ago, 150 years ago, 200 years ago. But we definitely need to talk about it, and we definitely need to learn from it and understand that how much of what we're taught in history here in this country is not as accurate as it could be.
Mm. Well, can you point out an inaccuracy that people are laboring under today that maybe Frederick Douglass could dispel?
Well, I think that, I mean, a very basic one is that, you know, the one of the most basic historical lessons that we learn is that Abraham Lincoln freed the slaves, which is true. Mm-hmm. He did. He signed the Emancipation Proclamation that freed the slaves. But it was so much more complicated than that, down to the fact that really, initially, Lincoln didn't want to free the slaves. Mm-hmm. Lincoln wanted he was only concerned with restoring the Union after the Southern states seceded and formed the Confederacy. Mm-hmm. And he weighed a lot of options, including one of the things he thought about was not just freeing the slaves, but then shipping all the black people off somewhere else, either sending them all back to Africa or sending them to somewhere in South America. Hmm. So the Abraham Lincoln that we think of, this sort of magnanimous humanitarian, is a construct of history more than anything else. And Frederick Douglass was very, very critical of him. And Douglass had his own newspaper, and so he wrote about him all the time. Hmm. And then they met on several occasions, and Douglass really, you know, for lack of a better term, lit a fire under Lincoln's feet and said, you know, this is what you need to do. Mm-hmm. And so those are some of the things that we talk about in the book, and we get into some of the more, I guess, ugly and gritty truths of the Civil War. Mm-hmm. And there's a section in the book that, you know, again, I could have written an entire graphic novel just on the history of the Civil War, but it was, you know, it was important that we contextualized that specific event, the war, against Frederick Douglass's story, because it was so crucial to his life and he was so crucial to the war movement. And so we talk about in the book, I talk about, you know, why the South seceded, and you know, through my research, I dug up the Articles of Secession for every state within the Confederacy, and we have quotes from some of them, and there it's very clear, you know, in the 1863 or 4, I always get confused what year the war started, what year they seceded from the nation, but every state that left and joined the Confederacy was very clear why they were leaving. Mm-hmm. You know, they were leaving over the issue of slavery. Mm-hmm. And now, 150 or so years later, mm-hmm. people have forgotten that. And they go, oh, well, it was over states' rights. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, in the proper sentence would be, the Civil War was over states' rights, comma, and the right to maintain slavery. Mm-hmm. But we end it with, it was over states' rights, and the sentence ends there. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's, like, people don't want to talk about that for whatever reason, but it's mm-hmm. like, well, until we talk about that, mm-hmm. where are we going to go? Mm-hmm. Where are we going to go as a country? And you know, I'm not one of those people who's looking to, you know, throw blame at some, again, in 2019, I'm not saying, oh, you know, white people are to blame for slavery in 2019, mm-hmm. but let's be real about slavery. Let's be real about the Civil War, mm-hmm. and because if we can't even do that, right? Mm-hmm. If we can't even agree over, you know, something from 150 years ago, mm-hmm. that there's tons of documented evidence that talks about what it is, mm-hmm. how are we able to agree over something that's happening today? Mm-hmm. You know, so.
Well, I can't wait to read that chapter.
Yeah,
that's going to be great fun, because, you know, the first introduction I really got to the Civil War was Ken Burns' TV show.
Yep.
And I remember being startled at the way he portrayed Lincoln, as Lincoln didn't believe in slavery, and he did it because he didn't believe in slavery. And I remember in my history when I was in school, they said that he did it for other reasons. He didn't do it because of that. He did it because he thought it would garner more support in the North. It would, you know, there were several reasons they did it, but that really wasn't because he didn't believe in it.
Yeah.
And I remember I remember when I saw that on Ken Burns, and I loved the rest of the show, but when that hit, I remember my head spinning around going, what? That wasn't quite accurate. He did wonderful stuff there. I mean, his portrayal of the Civil War was amazing.
Yeah.
But that, if I ever had a chance to talk with him, I would say, you know, you didn't get that quite right. That wasn't quite accurate. But the rest of it was terrific. But boy, I can't wait to read that, because I've often thought there's a lot more to the story than what people really know.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a couple truly amazing books on just the relationship between Lincoln and Douglass. And they only met three times. Mm-hmm. So you would think, well, how can you get such these great books out of that experience? But then you realize, well, there's all this other stuff about the two of them. And there's a couple of those books listed in the back of my book, the bibliography. I know that Giants was one. And then I can't remember the title. I only remember Giants because I'm looking at it right now on my bookshelf. Mm-hmm. A lot of the other books I ended up getting from the library because after a point it was like, oh, I can't spend another $20-$25 on one of these big, thick, heavy historical books. Let me go to the library. So I would walk through the local branch and they would be like, oh, here's this guy again.
Well, these days they won't say that to you. I can guarantee you that. They'll be thrilled to have anybody come through the doors, especially my brother goes to a library, and there are very few people in the library. He goes there to use the computer. He doesn't actually go to use the books.
Yeah.
But he goes there, and they love him because he goes there so regular-like. So I think that would be – I think they'd love for you to come back and do stuff with him.
Oh, I go there all the time. I'm at the local branch of my library at least – two, maybe three times a month. Oh. And I there's a new project that I can't talk about, but okay. It's another nonfiction book. Mm. And so I go online pretty regularly and I can put books on hold at the library and then go pick them up. So I'm getting ready to go down that rabbit hole again.
Okay.
You know? But yeah, I kind of love that. I love that experience.
Well, I've got to talk with you a little bit about, I was looking at the preview pages and something stood out to me. You mentioned it, that Frederick Douglass learned English when he was rather young. And I saw on one of the pages how he learned it. It was the wife of a plantation owner was reading the Bible. And she started reading the Bible to him. And he, as he ingested all this good stuff, he became much more... I don't know if you say educated. I don't know what the word is, because he became much more aware and much more able to do those kind of, like, speak and understood words and good things like that. I was really fascinated by that.
Basically, what happened was he spent most of his youth being shuffled around. He had one essential owner. That owner died, and then Frederick was given to the owner's daughter, and so he was loaned out to people. And one of the families that he lived with and that he worked for was a family that lived near Baltimore. Mm-hmm. And the wife was she would read from the Bible pretty regularly, and she was teaching her young son how to read. Mm. And Frederick's job, and Frederick probably wasn't more than 10 years old at this point. Basically, his job was he was a babysitter for this kid, because they were in Baltimore. They didn't they weren't on a traditional plantation. He was more like a house servant. Mm. He took care of the kid, cleaned up after the kid. And the wife was teaching her son how to read. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting, and some of this, the true depths of the backstory, I didn't get into, but mm-hmm. she was the one who started teaching him how to read. Mm-hmm. And she came from a family that had never owned slaves before. Mm. So she was very unaware of both the law and the sort of social mores of the time. She didn't know it wasn't, you know, that slaves weren't supposed to know how to read. Mm-hmm. And then her husband is the one who, forbade her from teaching Frederick how to read more. Mm-hmm. But at that point, the damage was already done. This kid had learned how to read. And more importantly, when he saw his master's reaction to him knowing how to read and learning how to read, he realized that this is something he needed to do. Mm. That if this man was so opposed to him do it, and I think it's a lot that way with a lot of children, where, you know, your parents say, hey, don't play with that or don't do that, and it makes you want to do it more. it became something that was forbidden to him. So mm-hmm. But he was a smart kid, and he actually ended up tricking other kids, white kids, to teach him how to read. Mm. And it's that in and of itself is there's a lot of those stories are, you know, they get two or three pages in the book. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I wish I had like 15 pages or 20 pages. But he, you know, he learned early on that, you know, the importance of education, and then he repeatedly would get in trouble because he would try to teach other slaves how to read and write, and he was constantly getting in trouble for that. To the point there was a point where he, you know, he was worried for his life before he escaped that they were going to try to hang him, because it was a crime.
Mm-hmm. Wow. See, now, all this stuff is fascinating. This is only little bits of the whole story. I mean, there must be other wonderful things to go in this. So this book, I just can't recommend it enough. Life of Frederick Douglass, a graphic narrative of a slave's journey from bondage to freedom. And it's going to be available on the 8th, which is this Tuesday. And again, I have to say, if you want to read something that's going to, you're going to learn some good things from, and you're going to really get to understand different points of view with it, I think this book is just going to be, I'm not going to be able to put it down once I get started with it. It's such a great book from the way it's done. I just think you guys did a tremendous job putting this together.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, you talked a little bit. You've got another project in the works you can't talk about. Are there other things that you can talk about that you've got going on that's coming down the pike?
Yeah, I've got there's two projects that I'm co-writing. One is Bitterroot, which is a monthly series from Image. I'm co-writing that with Chuck Brown, and Sanford Green is drawing that. And that issue number 3 of that drops next week on the 9th. And having a lot of fun with that. And then I'm co-writing a monthly series over at DC with my good friend Brian Michael Bendis. We're doing a book called Naomi, which is part of the Wonder Comics imprint that he is spearheading over there.
Yeah, so. I just saw that. I was really kind of fascinated because that's the one book I really didn't know anything about in that Young Justice, a whole bunch of things that series. So I'm fascinated. What's it about, basically? Again,
it is about a teenage girl in a small town in the Pacific Northwest, which is where Brian and I don't live in a small town, but we do live in the Pacific Northwest. And one day, in her sort of like one horse, nothing ever happens town, Superman drops in for like 15 seconds in a big fight. And that gets her to wondering about all kinds of things, as she begins to try to figure out why this fight happened in her town, it also opens up these questions of who she is, because she's adopted, and she begins to uncover a mystery about who she is and where she's from. And so she is a character that is completely new to the DC universe. The town she's in is new to the DC universe, but she is surrounded by elements that are both familiar and also slightly different. And in that, I mean that we're taking aspects of the DC universe and we're going, oh, okay, so what if this happened over here? You know, I want to be careful because I don't want to have spoilers.
Oh, no.
I don't want to spoil anything, but it's the equivalent to like, we know who Aquaman is and we know where Atlantis is, but it's the equivalent to if we introduced elements to Atlantis and the lifestyle of Atlantis that no one has ever seen before. So that's sort of what we're doing. So we've got this new character and where we're opening it up and really sort of exploring elements of the DC universe in ways that hasn't been explored before. And you know, Brian and I have been friends for, you know, almost 20 years. Wow. And we actually teach together. We teach at Portland State University together. And this is sort of an extension of that, where we've talked about comics forever and we've taught together for a long time. And at some point it just seemed like, well, this is the natural progression. It's us taking everything we're teaching and everything we geek out about and trying to put it into a series. And that comes out, the first issue of Naomi comes out, I believe, the 23rd of January. So that's also this month.
Me
so
time
this to... is kind of a big month for me. It's a little crazy.
Yeah, well, good. That I like big months for you. I think those are going to be good things. Yeah. I'm going to contact my store owner and tell her right away. I want to make sure I get these. I wasn't exactly sure how I was going to approach all this. I've always loved Dial H for Hero. Ever since I was a kid, I loved that stuff.
Yeah.
And Young Justice, I enjoyed when Peter David did it back when. So I'm interested to see all these things come about. The Wonder Twins, maybe. We'll see about that.
I'll tell you, the Wonder Twins, mm-hmm. I was kind of like, maybe too. But Mark Russell is a great writer.
Oh.
I loved his Flintstones work and yeah. his Snagglepuss.
Yeah.
He's doing some great stuff. And I know him as well. So I know what he's got going with Wonder Twins. Mm. And it's like all of these titles are going to be pretty amazing. Mm. I've seen both entire issues and bits and pieces of issues, mm-hmm. and it's really an honor to be working on this. And if I wasn't working on it, I can say unequivocally that this is probably one of the most exciting things going on in mainstream comics right now. Is the stuff that's getting ready to come out from Wonder Comics.
Oh boy, well that's going to be fun, because you know yeah. DC every once in a while has been trying new things. You know, they've had the new hero thing, whatever that is, and then
yeah.
they started out the other stuff. I've always been concerned because, you know, I'm a big DC fan. I love DC stuff.
Yeah.
But for me, it always feels like their stuff doesn't catch on. You know, Marvel's the cool company. Everybody yeah. just loves – if you love Marvel comics and you love the characters, you're cool too kind of stuff. And it doesn't go with DC that way. And I kind of hope that this group, based on the way you're talking about it, maybe this will help – you know, change some of that perception of DC, that there are some cool things coming out from DC. That'd be nice to see.
I hope so too. I mean, I'm having a ton of fun working with Brian. Jamal Campbell, who's our artist, he's killing it. He's going to be the star of the book. Him and our lead character Naomi, and so I'm just having a lot of fun, and it's. You know, that's the thing. It's hard work. I'm not going to lie. Working in comics is not always easy.
Oh, no.
But it should also – there should be a fun element to it. And to be able to, sit down with a close friend of yours and just bounce ideas around and then see them start coming to life. And knowing that and what Brian and I are trying to do is we're trying to create something – that will appeal to long-term old-school fans such as yourself,
mm-hmm.
but also really bring in young new fans. You know, it's you know, none of us are getting older or getting younger, you know, and so at some point it's like I'm one of those people who wants to share my love of this medium with younger people,
mm-hmm.
and there's a lot of fans who it seems like they get, you know, bent out of shape. They're like, this isn't – these comics aren't for me. And it's mm-hmm. like, well, there's always going to be something out there for you.
Mm-hmm.
But how about you accept the fact that, you know, if this thing that you love so much is ever going to survive,
mm-hmm.
we need to bring in a whole new generation.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And that generation is – you know, obviously they're going to see all the movies,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they're watching the TV shows. So – let's get them reading the comics too, because that's what you and I fell in love with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's there was we're of that age where it's like, yeah, there you didn't get four or five movies a year.
Mm-mm.
You know, you didn't have. I mean, how many TV shows are there on right now that are, you know, superhero related TV shows just on network TV alone?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we do the best we had when I was a kid. The best we had grown up, aside from like. You know, the Adam West stuff mm-hmm. in syndication
mm-hmm.
was, you know, Bill Bixby and Lou Ferrigno and the Incredible Hulk.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that show did not capture the glory and the magic of the Hulk from the TV, from the comics, you know. So.
No, it's just kind of, it's so fascinating to me. I mean, we're living in a golden age right now because you've got all these shows. And I was just reading today, they're talking about making a pilot for Batwoman on the CW. And they keep saying
yep.
they're not going to do that anymore. They've got enough superhero shows, but they keep doing more.
Yeah.
So and we're lucky. I mean, and this is a good time. I mean, the movies are coming out. I was just looking at something that said that 2019 is going to have the most comic book superhero related movies of all time.
That's crazy. It is crazy.
It's great.
It is a really good time. I think, though, I do come back to, I would like to see people start reading the comics more, mm-hmm. or you know, if they're not reading the comics, they can, you know, if they're not holding physical floppies, they can read the trade paperbacks or they can read them digitally. Mm-hmm. But to me, there's still nothing greater than reading, you know. I went to the comic store, I guess it was yesterday or a few days back, and I got the first issue of Conan the Barbarian. Mm. Now that Marvel's doing it, Jason mm-hmm. Aaron is writing it, and mm-hmm. it was like, I never thought the day would come that I'd be feeling this giddy over Conan the Barbarian since I was a kid mm-hmm. and managed to somehow get my first, because that was like the one comic my mom was like, you're not allowed to read this. Mm-hmm. You know, it was forbidden to me. And I can't remember how I got, Marvel used to publish a black and white magazine called Savage Sword of Conan. Mm-hmm. And that was my first Conan comic that I ever got. And there was nudity in it. And I felt like I was like, man, I'm a grown up now, you know? And so I haven't read the Jason's first issue, but I love Jason Aaron's writing. Mm-hmm. And Masood did the art, and I was like, this just looks beautiful. Even if it's, you know, even if this is the only issue I pick up, it felt really good. It felt really good. And that thrill and that joy of comics, as much as I enjoy the movies, I love the way comics pull me in. Mm-hmm. And there's no greater feeling than that. That's part of why I love working in this medium.
Yeah, Frank Miller said one time, he said he opened up a Batman book and he fell in.
Yep, and that's it.
I always thought that experience was just wonderful. I remember the same thing happened to me. I was in the basement of our house, and there was a Batman annual down there. And Batman was in England, and he built this thing that he could put on his back, and he could float around or, you know, glide around this castle that he was watching. And I remember just being transported over there, you know, watching this. It was just an amazing thing. That kind of experience is the kind of thing that your book, I think, is going to give to me. It's going to be wonderful stuff. I'm going to understand a lot more, which is always a great thing.
That is a beautiful thing.
Yeah. Now I got two more questions for you real quick.
Sure.
I know that one of your things that you did, and I really enjoyed it when they came out from Dynamite, was Shaft. And then in 2015 you wrote the novel Shaft's Revenge, first
yep.
new novel featuring John Shaft in 40 years. Talk about that a little bit. What was that experience like?
Oh, that was a truly great experience. It was something that I wanted to do for a long time. It was a character that I wanted to play around with. I read Ernest Tidyman's original novel when I was a kid, mm-hmm. and it was something that I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, long story short, I found out who had the publishing rights, and I went to Dynamite, and because I knew the book needed to be a hard R. Mm-hmm. And said, you know, would you be interested in doing this with me on board? And then introduced all the parties to each other. And, you know, the end result was I wrote two Shaft series. One was 6 issues. The other was 4 issues. Mm-hmm. Both were collected. And then the novel. Mm-hmm. And really, you know, the sales were never as good as any of us hoped it would be. Mm. And they weren't good enough to warrant doing another one. But I keep telling Dynamite pretty regularly, hey, when you're ready, I will write another one, and I will do it for free even. So, you know, hopefully one of these days we can do some more, because mm-hmm. I love that character. And in fact, someone just asked me about him today, and I said, you know, if I don't get the chance to do another Shaft story, which, you know, that may be the reality, then it's time for me to write a new novel, you know, write my own detective story, that sort of thing. So, if I don't get to write another Batman story, or excuse me, Shaft story, it won't be the end of the world, because it means I'm going to come up with something completely new and original, which is probably at the end of the day, the thing I need to do anyway. So,
mm-hmm. All right. Last question. This kind of dovetails into that.
Sure.
I'm always asking people about female lead characters. And yep. the reason for that is because I have friends who think that a female lead character should be maternal. and that's it. They should be talking through their problems. They shouldn't be fighting. They shouldn't be scientists. They should be, you know, motherly and stuff. And I always say that that's so limiting. And I kind of have the same thing when I have friends of color that I talk with about stuff. And Sometimes they look at comics and they say that, you know, people of color in the comics are basically white with a dark tan. You know, and since you're a teacher in these things, and you know, you're not going to be the ultimate authority, of course, but you have a good perspective on this. How can comics make people of color more, I don't know how to say it.
More real.
Yeah. How can they do that? What would you advise people?
I tell this to my students all the time, and I tell this to myself. It doesn't matter if you're writing a character of color or a woman, if you're a man writing a woman, or if you're writing a character who's trans or whatever. I think one of the most the most crucial thing is you need to write your characters as human beings first and foremost, and you delve deep into their humanity. And once you start delving into their humanity, they begin to flesh out. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're say you're a straight white man, and you're writing a character who's a black trans woman, okay, I'm not saying that you can't do that. I'm all in favor of doing that, but I do think that you need to sit down and you need to talk to some black trans women. You know, if you are writing a character who has a disability of some kind, you need to study that disability. You need to talk to people about it. And you need whatever label or identifier that character may have is not all they are. And so first and foremost, they're a human being. And then those other things that are used to identify them, make sure you get them right. Make sure you're not leaning heavily into the any stereotypes. You know, I'm writing a creator-owned project right now where the lead character is a woman, and it's funny because you talk about the maternal, that sort of maternal side of that a lot of writers want women to have, and it's like, well, you know, she's a mom who's never met her children. You know, she's because it takes place in the 1800s. She's an ex-slave whose children were sold away. And so she doesn't have much in terms of that maternal instinct. And yet part of the story is about her trying to find her kids, you know, and now it's 20 years later and where could they be? And but you don't see her nurturing anybody. She's actually a bounty hunter. So she's gunning people down and stabbing them. And you know, what would Clint Eastwood be if Clint Eastwood was a woman? And it's like, that's what I've written. That's because nobody wants to see a Western where your hero isn't a total badass. That's what you want
to
see.
We had to survive. You had to do those things.
Yep.
Back in the West, you know, it's different now. Sometimes I think we try to infuse today's the way we do things, the way we expect things to be, into historical ones. I always like historical things that are actually accurate to the time.
Yep.
You know, I much prefer that. That's why I'm so looking forward to your book. I can't wait till Tuesday. It's going to be coming out, and as soon as it shows up on my Kindle, I'm going to be reading it. So I can't wait to do it. Oh, you got so many good things going on. I want to see more stuff from you. I can't wait until we get some more stuff with that. When that one project you said you can't talk about comes out, I'll have to interview you again so we can, when that becomes public, we'll have to talk about that because that'll be fun.
Sounds good.
All right, David. Well, you have much success. I hope this book is a big success. I hope it's in all the libraries across the country as well as schools, and people get to sit and read this good thing and learn about Frederick Douglass. I think it's going to be good stuff.
I hope so, too. Thank you very much.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
that's it for this week. Be sure to be back next time when I'll have another great interview with yet another terrific comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.